What's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Pete.
And we got another bonus episode for you right now with a great guy who we love talking about. He's a fantastic writer, and he's got a new project that is coming to Kickstarter very soon. The first ever Kickstarter from Ahoy Comics called The Forgotten Divine. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the podcast, Mark Russell. Mark.
Hey, welcome. How are you?
Oh, doing great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Oh, my gosh. Very excited to talk about this. So let's start with something that may or may not be your department. How much do you know about why this is Ahoy's first Kickstarter? And what, if anything, does that mean to you?
Well, I don't know why. I think that probably is more Tom's department. But I think that they chose this project specifically because it's a weird length. It's 64 pages long, so it would be a little long for like a one-shot, but a little too short for a direct graphic novel for the stores. So this felt like a good project to take the plunge on to try to like crowdfund this. And also, the fact that it's being crowdfunded and sold this way means that we can make it any length we want it, which is a unique it's a unique opportunity for a writer to just, especially in comics, to just make the story as long as it needs to be, not a page longer, not a page shorter.
Cool.
It's a rare opportunity, so I'm really grateful for that. Well, and I think it shows. It's a very tight story.
Oh, awesome.
Well, let's talk about the content of the story, and then we can get back to the Kickstarter of it all. But just so folks know, what's been put out there, at least, and I should mention, though we don't have a date for the Kickstarter yet, there is a pre-launch page up, so you can go to The Forgotten Divine by Mark Russell and Russ Braun. I believe is the full title. Probably search for The Forgotten Divine and it'll come up.
Yeah, if you Google that, Forgotten Divine comes right up.
Oh, that's great. On Google? Google.com, are we thinking, Pete?
Any search engine.
Any search engine. Bing, Yahoo,
Ask Jeeves.
Ask Jeeves.
Oh, I love Ask Jeeves.
That's my go-to.
He died. Did you know? Jeeves died, actually.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for bringing that up.
No problem. Anyway, what were we talking about? The content of the book. So the idea, or at least what is out there, is you have an unhoused veteran who is dealing with some mental issues and may or may not be dreaming sci-fi landscapes, alien atmospheres, potentially things that come with that sort of thing. That's the gist of what I've gotten about it, but what else do you want to fill in, if anything?
Yeah, I think that's the basic premise, that he's a guy who was an EOD, which means he would find landmines in Afghanistan during the war there and detonate them before they could kill anybody. And it sort of becomes sort of a metaphor for, you know, his life as this sort of reluctant cult leader. But he begins having these visions of this alien world, this alien landscape that he doesn't know what to make of them, other than maybe it's like a byproduct of his PTSD from being in Afghanistan. But then he starts meeting other people who are having the same visions. And so he realizes this is bigger than him. In a lot of ways, the community that he forms with these people that are all having these visions and trying to figure out what they mean kind of gives him a purpose in a sense of direction in life he didn't have before. So in a lot of ways, strangely, this becomes the best thing that ever happened to him, even though it places him within this persecuted minority that becomes known as the Forgotten Divine.
You are, I would say, very well known as a satirical writer. You've written a lot of things over your career in different directions. But as we've talked about before, you're always having these deeper, more thoughtful ideas underlying it. It's not just about throwing out jokes or anything like that, from Second Coming to Thanksgiving and everything in between. So what were you thinking about here? Was it about PTSD? Was it about cults? A lot of things in a mix. How are you coming at it?
It was more about cults. And at first, when I started conceiving this, I thought it would be kind of more satirical. I thought it'd be more like about how cults are about like serving the emotional needs of the people in them rather than about the beliefs. But as I started writing it, it became very different. It became much more sympathetic to the people in the cult. And I think it's more about how we all are looking for meaning, and that when we find it, it becomes hard for anything else to matter, and about how we create these rabbit holes for ourselves just because we feel like we finally belong somewhere. And so I think it's more about how understanding a cult from the perspective of someone inside the cult and what they get out of it, more than just looking at them as a bunch of crazy people. Even though the Forgotten Divine are seen as just a bunch of crazy people to everyone outside it, to themselves, this is like they're the holders of a reality they can't explain to anybody else because they experience it in this weird dreamlike fashion, and how isolating that feels from the rest of the world, but also how much it makes you feel like a family to the other people who are having these visions. And so I wanted to be more about that, about how this becomes the one thing that matters to people who are inside a group like this.
Yeah. This is really a lot of interesting, cool ideas. I'm very excited to read this. One thing you mentioned earlier that I want to kind of talk a little bit about is like, when you're writing for comics and the kind of, 22 or whatever kind of pages, and there's like page breaks and ads and stuff like that, and then this gets to be however long it is, like, is it just so much easier writing a story just to write the story and not thinking about like panel layouts and what you can fit on a page? Or is it just you're kind of used to it and it's not that big of a deal and I'm just trying to make a mountain out of a molehill?
Well, here. No, I mean the breaking a page down to panels is something that just happens naturally within my mind. So I don't mind that because I like to think of a story visually. But yeah, it's really nice to think and not have to think in terms of pages, not have to think in terms of like, well, this issue is 20 pages and it must tell 20% of the story, but to just sort of tell the story, and it allows you to do more interesting things with the storytelling in terms of the pacing and where you place reveals, chapter breaks, and how you you tell a story like a beat of the story until it's done. The story, it tells you when it's done rather than you trying to force it into this format.
Wow, cool.
Is that something then that you would like to play with more? I mean, I'm sure if somebody was like, here's our $1 million contract to write Spider-Man or whatever, you're not going to be like, no, thanks, I'm free for it now.
Right. No, there's nothing wrong with being, a 20-page, a monthly comic writer, and I've done that and I've loved it. But it is nice to have a change of pace, to be able to write something that just is like its own thing and its own length. And I think one of the advantages of doing this too is that one of the heartbreaking things for a comic book writer is if you write the best series you've ever written in your life and it's 5 issues long, you write that knowing that most people are not going to get to issues 4 or 5. It's just a fact of like the way the comics industry work, sales work. Your whatever your sales are at issue number one, they're probably going to be about half that or worse by the time you get to issue 4 or 5. And that's always been a source of frustration for me. It's like the idea that people aren't reading till the end. They're not getting the whole story. But if you do a project like this, where it all comes out, it's like one long extended one shot, that now they're going to finish the story. Now they're going to get to the end. Because so much of the meaning I try to pack into these stories happens in the last 10, 20 pages. And I feel like if you don't read the last issue, or if you don't get to the end, you're missing out on a lot of what I wanted to say with this. So one of the real advantages of doing a story in a format like this is I can go to sleep at night knowing people will read this to the end.
Well, I'll promise you, I'm going to read 3/5 of it and then stop. Yeah, it's not a guarantee. But I mean, this is something that you don't necessarily have to have a solution for, but this is, like you're saying, a perennial problem in comics, is that attrition that you get over time. How do you battle against that as a writer? Is there any way to battle against that with monthly comics, or is it just part and parcel with how the industry works?
This just might be copium on my part, but what I tell myself when I'm doing monthly comics is that in the end, the issues, while I'm happy people are getting them and buying them in comic shops, I really see them more as kind of like advanced promotional material for the books. Mm. Eventually there'll be books and people will buy the books and then they'll get the whole story. But what's frustrating to me is that a lot of times, you haven't lost readers. Readers are still interested in the story, but a lot of times they physically cannot locate a copy of issue number 4 of something or issue number 5, because comic shops will start carrying fewer and fewer numbers because they know that the attrition in sales. And what you don't want to have happen as a writer or as anyone is for somebody to be really invested in your story. They're reading it every month, and then suddenly they can't get issue four. And it's like a year later, you know, it takes a year for the book to come out. And by then they've completely forgotten about it and lost interest and lost all the momentum that they had. They don't even remember what the beginning of the story was. And that's completely, you know, self-defeating as an art form. And so I'm always looking for ways around that. And one of them is to write one shots.
Cool. I mean, definitely on the Kickstarter of it all, and this is maybe not even necessarily a question so much as something I think about a lot. I sort of railed against companies, maybe not as big, not the size of the Hawaii Comics, but like Marvel or DC or whoever coming in and be like, we're doing a Kickstarter. I'm like, come on, guys, you have other ways of doing this. But I've come around to the idea that something like this, it's giving the exact numbers to the exact people who actually want the comic versus a comic book store having to make some sort of 3 month in advance bet.
Yeah.
That, like, I think people will want this. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah. If I ran a comic book publisher, what I would do is I would just publish issue ones of everything so that the comic shops have their, get their sales and get pretty safe sales. Like they can usually move a number one, no problem. It's the later issues that stick around on shelves because they can't sell them, and then go directly to trade. So the issue number one is out there in stores, and the comic book stores can sell them knowing they're not going to have to probably waste many of them. And then people could tell from issue number one whether or not they like the story enough to wait for the book to come out. And I would publish it so, like, issue number one comes out, like, say, in May or June, and then the book comes out in, like, July or August. So don't publish issue number one until you've got the whole book ready to go. That's the way I would do it.
Smart.
Because I don't like this huge lag between when somebody's excited for a story and is reading it and when the book comes out. And I also don't like the fact that, you know, both the creative team and the comic book shop are left in the lurch with, like, issues 4, 5, and 6 that are just sort of, like, languishing on shelves. Mm.
Well, at the next Marvel Summit, I'll let them know that you should be running things.
I'm sure they'll be very receptive to that.
Well, honestly, though, I mean, Ahoy is a company that feels like they're really trying to innovate and come at comic book sales in a very different way, try to engage with readers in a different way. Is this something you've talked to Tom or anybody at Ahoy about?
No, maybe that's my next stop. But yeah, I know it's a frustration they've experienced, and I think Ahoy has been very good about experimenting not only with new ways to reach fans to be a delivery system for comics, but also the sorts of comics they publish. You know, themselves. They're
putting out great stuff.
Yeah, and it's very edgy and stuff that you would not find from other publishers too. It's like they're one of the few publishers out there that I would buy. I would take a chance on a title just because it's Ahoy.
Nice.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, I'm not going to spoil anything. I got to read the first 7 pages, and I know they're not out there yet, so I won't mention any specifics, except for one that I wanted to ask you about. There is a reference to a corn dog in here, which was a major feature of your run on X-Factor. Is that an Easter egg for X-Factor? Are we going to get more corn dogs?
Or do you just really have a love of corn dogs?
I think it's a corn dog thing. I tend to work them into a lot of stories.
Good for you.
The corn dog was invented here in Portland, Oregon, and we're very proud of that. It's a regional treat that has conquered the world. And I think they're just very visual too. It's like it's hard to draw, or you know, people look, you know, someone eating a cheeseburger or something, but a corn dog is very, you know, it's very easy to draw and it's very striking. It's almost like, in the 40s, when you're writing a film noir, like they all got cigarettes because it's such a visual thing. They're holding this little stick and it's got this plume of smoke coming out of it. It's almost like this adds to the fog and the mystery of the screen. I feel like the corn dog might be that for comics.
I love it.
It's like Humphrey Bogart holding a corn dog.
Contrasting this, there are some really beautiful pages from Russ Braun, at least that I've seen.
Oh my
here.
God. Yeah.
He's
knocked it out of the
it?
Park. I can tell you, as someone who's seen the whole thing, especially towards the end when the mystery starts to become revealed, this artwork will blow you away.
Now, I got to ask, is like, is that one of your favorite things about writing? If I had your job, I feel like it would be just like you send over a script and then you just get these amazing pages back. I mean, what is that like for you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's like Christmas every week because wow. You see these things in your head as you're writing them. And to see it actually drawn and like better than you imagined is like the biggest treat in the world.
Wow. That was cool.
Talking about the Kickstarter a little bit, I know we're still a ways off. Anything you can tease about that, the content, things people should get excited about?
Yeah, there's a lot of twists and turns of this story. And like I mentioned, the artwork is beautiful. Plus, there's some really amazing extras as part of the Kickstarter. Cool. One of which, if I might toot my own horn a little bit, is a variant cover as drawn by myself.
Oh. Nice.
So if you've ever wondered how underwhelming a Mark Russell drawn cover would be, now's your chance to scratch.
How much
itch.
Do I have to pledge to get a corn dog cover? Is what
I wish I talked to you like a month ago. I could have done a giant corn dog, or I could have done Humphrey Bogart with
or
a corn
just
dog.
Include a corn dog. Pay an extra $25, you can add on a corn dog at the end and send it the comic.
But the concept of my variant cover is like that this is somebody who's a member of the cult who's in a mental asylum, and they're given like art materials to draw what they've been seeing. And, and what they come up with is this crazy collage of like cutouts and art and like little written lines that are filling their head when they are having these dreams of the forgotten divine.
Wow.
That sounds awesome.
I can't wait to see that.
Mark, always great talking to you. Congrats in advance on the Kickstarter. Very excited to see it launch. Very excited to read 3/5 of the book. And I hope to talk to you soon.